What's up, guys? Coach Steve here. Welcome back to the Challenge Weekly Show. I am Coach Steve, and I'm here with Coach Ravioli. Coach, welcome to the Challenge Podcast.
Coach Rav.
Thank you. Was I close this time, Nick?
Very close. That's the closest anybody's ever come so far. So far.
I'll keep
that one up.
I'll get it right 1 week. So, Nick, today we are going to be talking all about injuries. And starting with an open question to you, have you suffered an injury within your training and fitness career?
I have. I've suffered a few over the time. Probably the one that I would say was the biggest eye-opener was a deadlifting injury. Who hasn't got one of those? But mine was just an annular tear in one of my discs. But like, actually, you know what? I only know because I had an MRI. I probably still have a million of them now. But yeah, I just had to learn how to manage that and learn about, different ways to still deadlift. So I was very up for still doing the movement. That was so important to me, but I was also very open to how I could do it without necessarily feeling the pain, feeling that fear, and also just getting back to where I was. So I just approached it straight away as something, as a bit of a challenge. And just learnt a lot from it and learned a lot about technique and a lot about also just what I can actually handle and what I need to handle. That's the other key thing, I reckon. What do you actually need to do in a day versus what you might like to do or what your ego might like you to do? I've worked my way back from that, and I'm only stronger than I was before. That has not hindered me in any way, shape or form, and I certainly don't ever think of myself as somebody with back pain anymore at all.
I think if I was to meet someone who's been training for more than a year and they haven't experienced any aches or pains or any quote formal injuries, I'd be surprised. And I guess within training, whenever we're using our body, we're at a higher chance of injuring some structures, right? And that's just part of the experience, right?
It is
kind of akin to, the car analogy. And, fitness professionals, healthcare professionals will often refer back to the human body being kind of like a car. And it's not really like a car, but it kind of is sometimes. And, the more you drive your car, the more that you need to service that car, the higher chance that, things start to wear down a little bit and you might need to change some things around or replace some things or modify some things. And, the human body is a cool car that it adapts. So the more you spin your wheels on the car, in the human body, the thicker the wheels become, right? The more that you turn the car, there's a point where you get better at turning your body in that regard. But sometimes we face problems with our training, right? And the initial response is that there's a sense of pain. Then if we continue to sometimes work through that pain or through other risk factors, we can face an injury. Now, I've got an injury story myself, and it's probably the biggest injury that I've suffered in my body. And it was kind of from a bit of a freak accident, right? So,
oh no.
The story was I was way back in year 12. So I was in high school. And in high school, I played lacrosse, right? Do you know what lacrosse is?
Yes.
My daughter plays lacrosse. I played lacrosse for Melbourne High, good on Melbourne High. And so lacrosse is a sport where we've got that stick, there's a net on the end, and we have a ball. You might be familiar with lacrosse balls that are used frequently in rehab settings or in like soft tissue settings. And year 12 was cool. I got named captain of the lacrosse team. So here I was, Coach Steve, year 12, captain of the lacrosse team. And first game out of the season, I went through a change of direction where I was playing in an attack position and I was changing direction. And as I changed direction, I started to fall on my knee. The defender fell with me. We both tumbled. I heard like a shotgun go off on my leg and I ruptured my ACL, right?
Ooh.
So first game, year 12, it was great. So I was very naive. So at the moment, now I'm a registered osteopath. I get to call myself Dr. Steve in the clinic. But at the time, I was very naive Steve. I had no idea. So what I did was, in a very stoic way, was I just wrapped up my knee in multiple bandages and basically walked it off, right? So I had lots of swelling in my knee, bandaged it up, and I eventually made it through life over the next, 6 months or so. I started to slowly make my way back into some exercise. I was walking, I started, running, I started playing a little bit of the training sessions, but I made it through. Then it wasn't until years later that I went and saw a physio because my knee was just starting to give me lots of problems. For example, I would bend down at work onto one knee, and when I'd go to stand up, my knee would lock and then click. Ooh. And I'd have to stand there in agony while I'm shaking my knee to try to unclick it, right? And I was maybe, 20 at the time. Anyway, fast forward the story. I eventually got an MRI, found out it was a ruptured ACL. It was a bucket handle tear of the meniscus, had quite a bit of wear down in my cartilage, technically diagnosed with osteoarthritis, whatever that means. And I went and got reconstructive surgery. Mind you, while I was prepping for my knee rehab, my knee reconstruction, like my prehab for that, I was still lifting, I was still squatting. And that was the first time I squatted 200 kilos was while I had no ACL. So
there you go.
I think the point of the story here and in both of us and the point of injuries is that one, it is a learning experience, right? I soon discovered that I didn't have enough hip strength to be able to make that change of direction. A little bit of a freak accident where someone fell on me as well. Okay, I was in the wrong place, wrong time. Whatever. But then I learned how to manage that condition, so much so that I was able to maintain my symptoms, still squat and deadlift and do all the things, even though I didn't have an ACL in my right knee for a few years, quite a lot of structural damage to that knee. But I found ways to work around that and continue to see growth, which is the point of today, right? So firstly, let's go through a quick medical disclaimer. So any information that we're discussing in this podcast is just of a general nature, and please don't take it with any meaning to you personally. And if you are experiencing any pain or major injuries, I highly, highly, highly recommend that you visit a registered healthcare professional to guide you through any rehab or prehab or anything like that that you need. Lots of times, management of a condition is very specific to you, and what works for us might be very different to what works for you. And I think the big part of it is a bit of experimentation with what works for you. But please, medical disclaimer, the information provided here is meant for entertainment and educational purposes. Okay.
Yes.
Right.
100%.
So firstly, let's go through a little bit of definition. So we're talking about the same things, right? So firstly, when we look, let's talk about pain, right? When we talk about those aches and pains in our body. And, Nick, just thinking there now, are you experiencing any aches and pains in your body?
Not currently. I mean, it very much can happen. But, so occasionally I will get little niggles in my hip flexors. And every now and then I'll get some buzzing in my SIJ. And so I know my little, everybody knows their body's quirks, don't they?
Their quirks,
and
yeah.
You can, you sort of know, you can even kind of track it back to what you've done to make it so. So for me, I mean, I'm sitting on your football, so there's no way I can be lazy right now. So my whole hips are opening up and everything's fine and dandy.
Yeah.
Now, I think so, at the moment, but.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think we've all experienced those aches and pains. And, right now I do have some small aches and pains. Maybe they're just DOMS. Maybe it's something else. But, in my body, there's some slight aches and pains. And you know what?
Feedback.
That's feedback, and it's completely normal, okay? Because essentially 100%. I want you to think of pain as just maybe a little bell or like an alarm going off, almost like a warning signal or like a just information that comes through. So we know that pain originates from the brain. Okay. So pain originates from the brain. And, through pain science, we once upon a time thought that pain originated in the area. So if you're feeling pain in your thumb, we used to think that pain was coming from your thumb. But really, pain is an experience that an individual has that comes from their brain and their brain's perception of the tissues of the thumb, right? So without going too deep into science, there's this idea of a homunculus in our brain that kind of maps out the sensory inputs on different parts of our body. And different parts of our body have larger areas of sensory input, such as our fingers. We all know our fingertips can have a really good sense of touch. But then you compare that to maybe your, back, you know, different feeling. It's not as sensitive, right? So, you know, we all know that if you jar your finger somewhere, that hurts a lot more than if someone slaps you on the back or something similar, right?
Even if you accidentally clip your nail too far down, you know, that can hurt for ages. It hurts.
Yeah. So pain by definition is the body's perception of potential or actual tissue damage, right?
Mm.
So keywords there, it's either potential or actual tissue damage. So we know that, you know, we've all maybe experienced this where someone's about to, I don't know, slap you in the face. You're playing with your friends or maybe your kids or something similar, and they're about to, like, you know, hit you in the face and you kind of flinch and you go, but they haven't actually hit you yet. So that's, you know, a perception of pain because you think it's going to cause you tissue damage, right? Then our experience with pain changes very differently to our environment. So maybe we've all experienced this, the classic stubbing of your toe, right? On a bit of furniture in your living room.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've done this before. Yeah.
Oh,
or maybe the Lego piece that's floating around, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, our perception of pain is very different every time you stub your toe, depending on a number of factors, such as the people that are around you. Maybe if you're in front of your kids, in front of your partner versus in front of your friends, you might respond very differently. Maybe one, you're trying to walk it off and try to be cool. Another one, you're trying to play it up a little bit. And another time, you're embarrassed, right? So very different experiences with pain.
Then we factor children in. Children are good at illustrating that. Children are very good at it because in front of their friends, things can happen to them that really painful, but then in front of their parents, one tiny little thing happens and they're in tears for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
So that's a very interesting example. They don't know that they're doing that.
No.
Mm.
Then of course we can factor in a whole bunch of other biopsychosocial factors, such as if you're feeling tired, stressed, you've got emotional factors in your life, you know, your experience with pain can be really heightened, right? Now, we do know that the experience with inflammation with a trained individual is very different to the experience of inflammation with someone who's non-trained. So someone like you and I and many of the challenges within the challenge who are going through weightlifting, exercise, these types of things, our body gets really good at managing inflammation and the perception of inflammation, meaning that if you don't exercise, you have a higher level of pain when your body's injured versus if you are trained and you become injured, you have a very lower perception of pain, right? So we're talking purely about inflammation because we know that inflammation causes chemical mediators in the system that the body detects, okay? So each individual will process a different injury, either tissue damage or perception of tissue damage, very different to each other, right? And, you know, maybe you're listening to this and you go, I have a high pain threshold. Okay, maybe you do. Or maybe you have a low pain threshold, but you're really a high pain threshold depending on the situation, right?
Mm.
So that's pain. Pain is often just a warning sign that maybe the tissue's injured, maybe it's not. And the body learns, right? How many of us have heard of people who have injured their back, maybe like yourself, Nick, and they're experiencing back pain for years, right? Do you know the healing times for a disc bulge injury? So maybe like the injury that you suffered, do you know what the normal healing time is?
Oh gosh, you can tell me now because I'm good.
Yeah. So what is it? It's via a textbook, right? The definition that we use is about this 3 to 6 month period. So if you have a symptomatic disc bulge, most disc bulges heal within 6 months, right?
So there you go.
Yeah. Even if you push it out, let's say 12 months, a year, you know, 99% of disc bulges are going to regress and heal within that year. Why do people still feel pain years on? I mean, that's the million-dollar question. Most of it is to do with a learnt experience of pain, a little bit of what we call kinesiophobia, where we're scared of movement, or we haven't learnt from the painful experience and modified our behaviors throughout the day. So if you've experienced back pain, that might've been a combination of lots of different things. Maybe you're sitting down more, maybe you've lost some range of motion in your hips, maybe you're trying to train too hard, these types of things. And if we don't modify that, then we're more likely to be suffering from consistent pain over and over again. So the main point of that is that injuries really should be a learning experience, just like you've experienced, just like I've experienced. Yeah. It's a way that we go on. Now, finally, let's talk about how do our body's tissues get damaged, right? How do they get damaged? Now, the main reason that the body's tissues become injured is through a mismanagement of load. When we think about bodybuilding or weights training in general, that's actually one of the safest sports out there, right? The safest hobbies out there. When we compare that to, let's say, AFL, the injury rates aren't even on the same chart. You know, AFL is somewhere like, you know, 50 injuries per 1,000 hours, and bodybuilding is like less than 5 per 1,000 hours, right? So very, very different experiences, mainly because we can manage our load very wisely, right? In a, on a football field, you can't really determine how heavy your opponent is, how fast they're running towards you, which leg you're going to be standing on when you take that tackle, and how you fall in that heap.
Yeah, too many circumstances. Yeah,
right. But when you're squatting, you can determine how much weight's on the bar, how many reps, how many sets, your total volume. So injuries happen when the load is greater than the body's capacity to withstand that load, or technically the body's ability to adapt to that stimulus. So if you have been, you know, squatting 100 kilos forever, and then you put on 200 kilos, all right, there's a chance that the body's not going to be able to withhold that load, right? Because it hasn't adapted to that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah. Especially because you just doubled the load there as well.
You just doubled the load, right? Right.
I'd be squashed.
I know. Yeah. So that kind of leads us on to risk factors for injury. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about load, right? How do you manage your load, Nick, when you're training? And then when I mean load, I mean, you know, like your sets, your reps, your overall weight that you're lifting. Like, how are you managing that yourself?
Well, you definitely, you know, have periodization. So you're not always doing maximum lifts. I mean, the thing is, I must say, in my younger years, when I wasn't aware of all of that as much, that's where I got myself into trouble, because I was doing a particular program at one point that actually really glorifies that and sort of just keeps it on the extreme, and it's actually unsustainable. So if you're working on the edge like that, something's going to happen to you. But you can easily still get the same, if not better results. Obviously, better results just by dropping the load, upping the volume of you know, the number of reps, things like that. So I don't take myself to the edge anymore. Like, I don't redline myself. So for me, I just stay within about, you know, 80% most of the time, and everything works pretty well. I'm not a thrill seeker anymore, Steve.
I think for me, almost a similar thing, where in the past I was really lazy in tracking my training, right? Now I'm a little bit more diligent, where I would monitor, you know, my overall working sets, my overall weight that I'm using. And I'm at the moment, I'm mainly interested in the total volume of exercise that I'm doing, less focused on the load. And if you kind of follow me on Instagram, you can see that I don't really lift very heavy, but I do modify my training via the volume that I do, rather than the weight that I do. But, you know, when we consider load, we're starting to consider all the work that our body's doing, right? Where, you know, we need to factor in, all right, you've got a job, you're doing some cardio, you've got a family, you're running around with them, then you're trying to put in weights training. All right, there's an overall load that you have to bear. And then there'll be a tipping point, you know, that straw that breaks the camel's back, as you will, that we need to be aware of, right? When's the camel's back on a break? We don't really know that. But if we can start to get a picture of what load we're doing, then we can get a better understanding of that, right?
Yeah. And I do think over the lockdown, when all of us had to really concentrate on volume, really, I mean, even if you had all the weights in the world, everything was so fatiguing that a lot of people didn't max themselves out all the time, even if they had access to. I had access to a whole bunch of weights, and I don't think I used them all at any point. It just wasn't appropriate. So I got to really respect and get a lot of good gains out of just volume as well. Just instead of just seeing it written on a piece of paper and going, yes, of course, I should do that, actually doing it and being forced to do it has been the best thing ever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, absolutely. I even trained through Not that I mean, I had my varicose veins done and they were pretty bad. It took me probably 6 months to recover, and I had them done over COVID. And that's not an injury, but there was sort of pain possibly associated with that, and a lot of advice not to necessarily do much stuff. But I personally, my own thing was just to keep moving. And so I had to, you know, navigate a whole sort of thing with my body and my legs that I hadn't had before. And if I'd have sort of succumbed to pain, I wouldn't have even probably walked. Do you know what I mean? It was kind of an interesting feeling to not be able to use my legs properly. So I really did discover volume.
Yeah.
That was absolutely my point.
Now, Have you heard of the concept called the acute to chronic ratio?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah. Go on.
Oh, no, no. I was just going to say, you go first and then I'll go after you.
So, yeah, the acute to chronic ratio is an interesting ratio, which we can take a look at what we've been doing in the acute phase. So we're talking maybe like within the week, and compare that to the chronic phase, maybe like the past month. So essentially we're comparing our week of training, or the current session of training, and then compare that to the month of training. And we can look at the variables that we've been training to measure the level of risk, right? So let's use some examples. Let's say I'm training my chest, and on average over the past month, I'm doing, let's say, 20 sets of chest work per week, right? Then if I was to try to increase my total volume of chest training to something like 20 sets in one session, right? If we think of that acute stimulus coming towards me, 20 sets, maybe I'm training with a buddy of mine. We're going to get a chest pump and go out for lunch or something like that, you know, as bros do. Maybe we're going to be doing something like that. I can compare my past month of training, going, oh, well, I'm averaging about 20 sets per week. Now I want to do that all in one day. Ooh, I don't know about that. Then there's a really high chance that I'm going to suffer from an injury related to that muscle group. So let's say maybe the shoulders, the upper back, maybe into the neck, you know, muscles that are around that chest area. So we can start to look at that ratio.
Interestingly enough, you probably, during that session, you probably get away with it. You'd probably be absolutely fine because of also the external factors such as training with your friends, just all that external stimulation that then later on you would stop and hit the wall in a way, and things would manifest probably even in your normal regular training, maybe a week later, that you'd actually you'd done it that day. It's that's where the brain comes in, and it's very interesting because you can block it out. Like if you're training with mates and you feel a niggle, I mean, unless you're sensible like yourself, like you just kind of push through it, you know. So that's also a very interesting external factor, because sometimes you can do those things in those sessions like that and then not realize it for a while.
Yeah.
And think that you've done it somewhere else. But your body, because your body can actually take that load for a day, especially with the external, with people yelling. And I mean, it's amping me up now just even thinking about it. Like I could probably do all my max deadlifts that I used to do just simply because of that external, factor that's coming in. So then that's where you can kind of put the germ of the niggle, like the start of the niggle, and then it can kind of progress from there into your normal training. So then you go back to your shed, and then that's where it would probably happen.
Injury.
Sorry.
I do think it's important to consider that ratio, right? Because let's say, you know, you change it to running, right? So, you know, Nick, maybe right now you might not be doing lots of running like you used to when you're training for like a triathlon or the Ironman or something like that. So if you kind of go, oh, well, I used to be able to do a 10K in, you know, 40 minutes, that was pretty chill run, something like that. Today you went to go for a run and you're like, oh, well, maybe I'll just do a 10K, just smash it out and come back. In your lunch break, then you're putting yourself at a higher chance of injury, because if we compare chronic, what you've been training previously, so let's say the past month, have you been doing any running? No. And then now you're trying to do something that's really out of that range. You're going 10K. Okay, now you're starting to be putting yourself at a higher risk. Does that mean injury will happen? We don't know. But if we're going to be looking at the risk factors, hey, maybe there is a higher chance. What might be a better approach is that maybe you start with a lower volume activity where maybe you're running a 5K at a slower pace. And then, you know, we're doing that over a couple of week period and we slowly build up that capacity again so that it's within that chronic ratio. So it's not too far of a change, right? And we can apply that to almost any variable. So let's say load, you're training for a powerlifting comp. You know that your max deadlift is, you know, 200 kilos, but at the moment, over the past month, you've only been lifting maybe 100 kilos on a deadlift. All right, maybe it's not wise to go on that 200 kilos straight away. Maybe we spend a little bit of time working on, you know, that 140, we've got three plates, we go up to 180, we've got four plates. All right, now let's go to 200. So we're slowly incrementing our way up into those loads, right? Now, there are a few other risk factors that might put us in a higher chance of injury, right? And probably the big one is our sleep quality, right? So did you know that if you have a poor night's sleep, you're something like seven times higher risk of injury compared to someone who has a good quality sleep? Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. Something quite high. Sleep is, yeah, it's just everything's coming back to sleep at the moment. So it's massive. And it also comes down to, you know, the inflammation in your body just caused by lack of sleep as well. So you're sort of starting from behind if you have that kind of a night. Or also, it's not just, it comes back to that chronic thing as well. It's chronic non-sleeping. And you know, if you get not enough sleep, or like less than 7 hours even for 3 or 4 days, that can really set you back.
So sleep is a big one. So if you're having poor quality sleep, you are at a high chance of injury, right? The next one is, generally speaking, of hydration, right? So hydration, not so much, you know, do you drink X amount of liters of water or fluid? We're talking about our cellular hydration, our tissue hydration, because we know that tissues that are dehydrated are at a higher chance of injury. And imagine it like, you know, almost like this spongy material, yeah? So a lot of our soft tissues are kind of like a sponge. If they're well hydrated, they can bend, they can twist, they're very pliable. But if they're dehydrated, they might be a little bit stiffer. They have less pliability, so that there is a higher chance of injury. So if you find that maybe one certain day you're not drinking as much water, as an example, maybe there's a few other factors that modify your hydration, such as the temperature outside, your salt, your carbohydrate intake, all these things, then we go and train. Okay, maybe you're at a higher chance of injury. So we do need to want to be aware of our hydration. And how do we know about our hydration? Well, if I said, how hydrated are you? You could probably give me a rating of 1 to 10, right? We all kind of have this internal feeling of how hydrated you are. Like for me, right now, you know, I've been drinking water all morning and I still don't feel hydrated. I kind of have this feeling of dehydration, right? So maybe there is some other deficiency that's stopping my hydration, and that's okay. That's for me to figure out. But we all have this internal feeling and it doesn't always correlate to how much per liter we drink. Right.
No, that's so true. So true. Because you can go the other way. Sometimes you think you need to drink and drink and drink. And I see even people on the forum going, I have 5 liters. And sometimes you actually have to stop and listen to what your body actually needs the other way as well. Yeah. So, it's important to actually just stop and listen to what's going on every day. Like if you're feeling slightly unwell, you might need a little bit more hydration. You might also need to rest.
Now, the next risk factor that can contribute to a chance of injury is our overall tissue warmth, right? So this is similar to this idea of hydration, that if our tissues are cold, they are a little bit stiffer compared to if they're warmer, this is where the role of a warm-up comes in, right? Where the whole point of a warm-up is mainly to warm up the body. Right. You know, get blood flow circulation, nourish the tissues and get some warmth in the area. And we do see some changes in the soft tissue pliability, which could maybe decrease our chance of injury. Right.
Yeah, definitely. Because, like with everything that you've said, the worst case scenario for someone would be to walk into the gym dehydrated, see their mates and just pick up their top weight straight away off the floor. And I think in our younger years, every single person has probably done something like that. You know, that's just the way it is. But see, that all of that's an absolute recipe
for something. And if it doesn't happen that one time, it'll happen another time.
Yeah.
So, there are just so many factors that you can be in control of before you even hit. I keep thinking deadlifts, but before you even hit that platform to do anything.
That's right.
There are so many variables that you can manipulate to get to that point and have a better chance of not having to worry about being injured.
I've definitely done that where, you know, I might be a few minutes late to the gym with my buddies and they're, you know, starting to warm up on, let's say the bench press. So, you know, we might be lifting 100 plus, whatever, maybe like 120 or so. And I've rocked up to the gym. They're ready up to maybe 100 kilos in their warm up. Yeah. So for me not to be an inconvenience, it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. I'll just start at 100.
Exactly.
And then, you know, doing a few reps, I go, oh, geez, my shoulder, ouch. And then it kind of ruins the whole session. And then, you know, if I pushed a little bit harder, I could have been risking a higher injury where I might have been out for a few weeks, not just a few minutes, that type of thing.
And just from a psychological point of view, everybody does this. You know, you're running late, you turn up somewhere and you know you can lift the thing. So, just for example, if it's like if there's 100 kilos on the deadlift barbell, it's like for me, I can do it, but if I'm not warmed up, it feels pretty heavy and pretty weird. And I sort of know that I haven't even, for me, I like to ascertain what's going on in my body on any given day, because sometimes particular loads can feel like incredibly heavy that aren't normally heavy at all. Like with my warm up, if I'm doing 60 kilos or something, sometimes that can feel like a million and I'm like, oh, and then I need to warm up more and then I'm not sure. So there's no real recipe for it, but you've kind of got to get to know what you need to do to get to that point where you decide if it's a day where you want to go to that next level or you just want to hold it still in a holding pattern. Yeah. That's what I do anyway.
That's quality order regulation we have there, Nick.
There you go.
Yes.
Yes, quality. But I think the thing is, it's very important just, I keep coming back to it, but you can't let the numbers get in the way of what else has gone on in your day. So you can't go, like, for example, it's best for you not to rock up to the gym straight away, put your bag down, not even go to the water fountain and get that 100 on the bench press. And you can do it, but what's the cost of it?
That's right.
That's what we need to sort of figure out for ourselves.
Now, we so far in this podcast, you know, we're not saying that all these things lead to an injury. We're talking about the risk
of an injury. Cascade of interventions that it can happen. Not at all. Because there's many times where all these things won't at all lead to an injury. Like if I went out and ran a 10K now, I might get a little niggle in the hip flexors and that's about it. And that'd be great. But then, you know, it's about how do we sustain our training keep it sensible.
That's right. Now, the final risk factor, which is probably likely the bigger one, is kind of around this idea of mental focus, right? Because when we're in the gym, we're lifting weights, we're doing exercise, anything where we're moving our body, we do need a level of mental capacity to train. And if we aren't in there mentally, there's a higher chance that we will do something a little bit silly, right? And a classic example would be, let's say, like a squat, right? We all know in like a barbell back squat, there's a certain form range that we want to try to hit where we're lowering ourselves down. We're trying to keep the weight over our feet and then we're about to stand back up. Now, if you weren't focusing, you might lower yourself down a little bit too quickly. You fall a little bit onto your heels and you try to correct that. You fall a little bit more onto your toes. The weight starts shifting forwards and backwards and you start applying load into structures where that don't have the capacity to manage that load. And I'm talking maybe some of these smaller muscles in your back and your hips and your knees, these types of things. So if you're not focusing in that moment, then you're at a higher chance of that load transferring. And remember what I said earlier, how do tissues get damaged? It's when the load is higher than the capacity or the ability to adapt to that stimulus. So, you know, in a squat, it's safe to move straight up and down, right? You know, we've got, you know, big muscles in our back and our thighs and our hips to manage that load. But if we aren't focusing and we tip forward, okay, there's a higher chance of injury there. If we're shifting from side to side, we're looking at that person who's looking at us while we're squatting, the music's going weird or whatever it's going on. If we're not focusing, that's when injuries can happen, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Now, let's shift it a little bit. And we've spoken a little bit about the risk factors for injury. Now let's talk a little bit about what to do if you are experiencing pain or experiencing an injury, right? So my first thing that I'd recommend anybody to do is if you are experiencing any pain or injury or aches or anything like that is to seek help, right?
Yeah.
Of course, most of us would be within the capacity to be, you know, Dr. Google and figure out what's going on. But I would highly recommend that you visit a registered allied healthcare professional, someone like an osteo, which would be similar to myself, or a physio or a chiro or heck, even a massage therapist or your GP will be able to guide you and make sure that there isn't something serious happening. Because we do know that there's quite a few systemic injuries and diseases that can manifest as a musculoskeletal injury first. So it's yes. probably best to rule out any red flags, rule out any bigger problems and seek help. Okay.
Definitely.
And there's nothing wrong with seeking help, right? Nothing wrong.
No, not at all. You need to have a good team around you anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, as we said before, I'm not currently injured, but I've got a team of people that are still all of those, you know, if I need them on hand, and I've got plans with everyone, mm-hmm. because I think that's what a good athlete has. I think you have to protect the downside. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, yep. make sure that you've got that team in place at all times.
Absolutely. Mm. The next thing comes from a little bit of my medical professional hat is that we want to stay active. Now, the biggest problem I see when patients come to me with back pain is that the first thing they want to do is sit on the couch and have rest, right? And maybe this is something similar to what GPs often prescribe to individuals who have back pain, but we end up in this kind of negative position where, you know, it actually makes our pain a little bit worse. We start to become fearful of movements, right? And it can prolong our tissue healing time. So what we highly encourage is that you stay active within your capacity. So, you know, if you're experiencing a knee pain, all right, let's try to, you know, move around a little bit that doesn't aggravate too much pain, right? Even a bit of back pain, same thing. You know, maybe going for a walk, these types of things. Because firstly, when we talk about pain, you know, pain is normal. Pain is just a signal. And some pain is okay. So if you're experiencing pain that is less than like a 5 out of 10 that you rate, I'm going to say that that's okay, right? But if you're experiencing pain, that's maybe like a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 out of 10 pain. Okay, maybe that's a little bit too much. And whatever activity you're doing is a little bit too much for the pain that you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. So we want to stay active, right?
Okay. Big thing is to stay active.
Stay active.
Very important.
And we also know that more recently, non-specific exercise in some capacity is helpful for our experience with pain, right? And most rehab protocols now within physiotherapy for things like lower back pain, knee pain, aren't really specific exercises such as, you know, do this clam with this resistance band, 3 sets of 10. It's just, you know, go and exercise. Maybe go ride a bike if you enjoy riding a bike. You know, do some, you know, weights training of some sort. Maybe let's do like a squat and a lunge, and that's your rehab program now. So we're starting to shift a little bit within the medical field where we're starting to steer away from specific exercises and, you know, these specific cookie cutter programs. So more of like, okay, well, let's just have some sort of general activity so that we can strengthen the body as a whole, right? So stay active mm-hmm. is the big one, right? And then my final bit of advice, if you are in pain, is that, yes, it's not the end of the world, okay? Everyone experiences pain in some sorts. Pain under a 5 out of 10 is completely fine. If you're experiencing a little bit more pain, you know, higher than a 5 out of 10, okay, maybe that is a little bit too much. Interesting statistic around back pain, similar to your injury, Nick, that there's quite a number of interesting studies that did an MRI on individuals who had no pain. And what they were trying to do was to determine what the body looks like in an MRI, right? What's normal? So people maybe like myself, maybe like you right now, not experiencing any big aches or pains. We're not classified as injured, but they put us under an MRI and wanted to MRI our shoulder, our hip, our back, and see what they find, right? And this was done on thousands and thousands and thousands of individuals, and they documented what they found. And it was quite interesting, where
I bet the number was something
like 2/3 of individuals had a disc bulge of some sort, right?
Yeah.
So these are
that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Mm.
Thousands of people with no pain have an MRI confirmed disc bulge, but no pain, right? And this, two thirds of people. And this was similar findings to things like rotator cuff injuries, things like labral tears in the hips, things like degenerative tendons, or even degenerative changes in the spine, such as, you know, narrowing of joint spaces and spondylitic changes, right? So we start to go, okay, well, you know, things like our scan, our MRI, the X-ray, well, what does it mean? You know, that isn't your diagnosis. That's just the findings. That might not be the reason for your pain, right? Mm. And like what you said right at the start, and I think you've kind of gone through this yourself, where, you know, an annular tear, you know, might just be something that's normal for you at that time. That's
got me through. Just what you're telling me was enough to get me through, going, well, you know, I can't confirm that specific movement did that to me. I can't say. So therefore, why would I be scared of doing it? Because I have no real way of knowing. And also, what is it?
Yep.
It's not limiting me in any way, shape or form. You know, I'm still able to do everything. So just get out of my own head in a way. But that's, of course, after all the advice that I had, and I was well looked after. But then I had to also take matters into my own hands and just go, okay, put your brain out of this. Yeah. As you were saying, you know, it's all in the brain. So it's just interesting, because I was very much able to get through that. And now I am what I am.
Yeah.
The masterpiece that you've seen. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm able to move through it and you know, come out the other side and absolutely be fine. Like no mention of it. And also the other thing is, Coach Steve, I would say that if it happened to me again, I wouldn't, if I felt that pain again or there was anything like that, I've learned enough now to know how to manage it and that it will go away. So it doesn't, I haven't become my injury.
Yeah, it's not your identity now.
Yeah, because I do see people becoming that. Even my dad, you know, with back pain, it's like he has back pain and that's that. And it's like, well, how? You know, you've got to try and move past that so it's not just your entire identity.
Yeah. You wouldn't believe how many people come into the clinic and, you know, be like, I'm like, hi, you know, such and such, how you doing? They go like, hi, I'm such and such, I have back pain. It's like, hi, back pain, nice to meet you. Or, you know, they know the name of their condition. They go, oh, hi, I have AS, or hi, I've got a rotator cuff strain, or hi, rah, rah. It's like, oh, nice to meet you too. Let's just be careful that we're not becoming the identity or what we believe we would need to be if we did have that condition, because that's
that, and you know problem. And it's very fair that people sort of start to think that way, but yeah, we're just suggesting that there's another way of thinking, of just changing that brain a little bit and becoming more than that and exploring more, you know, further into it, and just seeing if it's something that you can actually move past in your life to the next phase. Don't get stuck.
All right. From here, let's talk about how someone would work around an injury. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think we again have to preface this as it's not medical advice, but maybe this is something that you can add within your experimentation so that you can work around your injury. So I think firstly, you know, we'll talk about, let's say, Nick, your experience with back pain. You know, you still wanted to train. Could you speak a little bit about, you know, how did you modify your training so that you could still train? You know, did you change some exercises? Did you change some load? Like, what did you kind of do so that you can still train?
So for me, now this is only my experience, as we said. So with the preface of this is just me, but with deadlifting, what I did was I just changed my range of motion. So I made it, you know, found some pretty high blocks at first, you know, some boxes, and really basically did like a modified rack pull. Sort of until my goal was just to get the boxes lower and lower and lower until I could lift again off the floor. and feel okay doing that. And it actually ended up being that it was more a battle of my mind versus my body. I think my body healed before I even got down to the floor with that. And this was not in one day, by the way. It makes it sound like this happened in one day, but this was progressing over probably about 8 or 9 weeks for me just to get back to where I initially was, probably even just a little bit more cautious than I initially was, which is probably a good thing. But so I just modified my load, obviously, and range of motion. So the rest of it was kept pretty much the same. So I was still able to get, you know, the benefits of training. And also just for me, everything is so psychological. It has to, if my brain's feeling okay, my body will feel okay too. So, so I just modified the range of motion for that deadlift and made sure that I was still doing that movement pattern. So then I also didn't become fearful of it.
Because
it can be quite scary. So you don't want to become scared of your of that movement because you'll never do it again.
You know, I agree.
If
I, let's talk about knee pain. Now, knee pain is quite common through individuals, and it's often that big barrier as we go, you know, a big front. Nope, I have knee pain. I don't lunge. I don't step up. I don't squat. I don't leg press. Yeah. I don't do anything in the lower body because I have knee pain.
I've seen a lot of people in my classes over the years that say exactly that. Yeah.
I've trained a lot of people. Yeah.
And
you probably start thinking, it's like, well, you probably have knee pain because you don't train your knees or the muscles around your knees, right?
Exactly, because everything else gets weaker, and that's why you're injured anyway. So you've got to train the structures around that injury anyway. So, yes.
So I think for me, when I was in the peak of my knee pain, knee discomfort, I was still training. And what I found was that it was really, really painful to bend my knee, right? Because I was basically holding it together with bandages and stuff while I was training at my high school gym and stuff. And what I would do is I would find exercises that worked where I wouldn't bend my knee. So that's when I first discovered the GHD machine. Do you know the GHD machine? So it was that, and then the 45 degree like back extension machine. And what I found was I could go into that machine and kind of modify my foot position, and I was able to just burn my hamstrings and my glutes, right?
Yeah.
And
glutes of steel.
And then what I found was my knee pain started to go away because I was starting to train the muscles such as my glutes and hamstrings that are around the knee, right?
Exactly.
Then I started to do activities like a really simple calf raise because I was like, oh, well, I can train my calf raises. Great, happy days. And then I eventually found a kind of like a stiff-legged deadlift, and then the deadlift where I wasn't bending my knee as much as a squat, but I was still able to lift, right? So there was a time, it took a long time before I had the confidence to go into a squat pattern, but that was okay because I was still training my legs through a straighter leg position such as a stiff-legged deadlift or a Romanian deadlift, the 45 degree back extension or the GHD that we had, or a simple calf raise. So there's always ways to work around that injury as the tissue healed. And then now, you know, I would say that I enjoy doing squats more than I enjoy doing deadlifts right now, right?
Yeah, that's brilliant. And just all those structures around the knee, the ones that, like, you know, it all starts from the feet. So the calves, things like that, you may have never have trained them in that way if you hadn't have had that injury. So you wouldn't be the strong powerhouse that we have in front of us today if it wasn't for that injury, I believe.
Now, finally, let's talk about shoulder pain. Shoulder pain is another quite common thing that we see complaints about, and I've experienced my fair share of shoulder pain. And this kind of was when I had my ACL reconstruction. I was in a splint for a long time. I had to kind of rehab my knee all over again. So I did lots of upper body work, and I did lots of bench press. And I was foolish enough to go and do a few Smolov programs, if you know what Smolov is, where I would be doing crazy amounts of volume on the bench press. And eventually my shoulders started telling me that they didn't really like doing Smolov.
Shoulders talk a bit, don't they? Shoulders can be noisy little things.
Yeah. So I even know now that when I tend to overreach on a bench press, my shoulders tell me and go, Steve, maybe you go a little bit too hard, too fast. And especially as we go through periodization, where I would like wave my training, if I'm kind of like increasing too quickly, then, you know, my shoulders know about it. But, you know, talking about a few tips on how we can manage shoulder pain, I think most of us would experience shoulder pain whenever we're pressing directly overhead, right? That's probably the most common reason that we experience that pain. Now, we can always make that modification. So instead of pressing directly vertically, maybe we press in a little bit of an incline angle. So we're starting to use the shoulder because we're pressing in front of us, or maybe towards like that bench press, we're pressing horizontally. So we're moving that shoulder, maybe we're moving away from that painful activity where we're not pressing overhead, right?
Do you think that sometimes people without even knowing it would be naturally inclined to just find that slight angle because it feels better, right?
Yeah.
So that's just, it's the body's natural way of moving into a position where you're not aggravating and niggling directly above. You might not even know you're doing it, but like that slight modification is what's keeping your shoulders from talking to you.
I think from here, you know, like I know a little bit about anatomy and biomechanics, and I know which position is likely going to piss off my shoulder versus which position isn't. So, you know, we can make those slight modifications. But then at the end of the day, you know, all I'm really doing is modifying my loads. Maybe I'll just lighten the weight a little bit. I could still get some training into that muscle group, or modifying the range of motion, like what you've experienced with that deadlift pattern. I think the final thing that we could do to manage almost any injury is to make use of machines. So, and most commercial gyms, there are some pretty cool machines out there that really change the way that we can do the exercise so that it takes away lots of stability requirements and we're simply pressing. So things like a leg press, right? Things like a machine overhead press, or maybe a simple leg extension. That was one of the first machines I started using with my knee. Was I felt safe in a leg extension, even though it was probably the most tension in my knee, but I felt safe. Yeah. And that was the big one. I felt safe. So I just sat there, just leg extensions that are lightweight. And I was like, okay, my knee's starting to get better, right?
I agree. I agree. I think machines can be very underrated. I mean, being in the bodybuilding side of things now as I am, I mean, yeah, they can be so handy for so many things, but especially like if you think about it in the sense of injury prevention or management more, they're very good because you just don't have to worry about all those stabilizers. And as you said, the key thing I still believe is that psychological feeling of feeling safe. You know, I think that just goes such a long way as well. And you don't have to have that extra stress of the big heavy barbell.
Absolutely. Look, let's wrap it up there. Thank you for tuning in to this podcast all about injuries, about risk factors for injuries, what to do if you're in pain, and then working around injuries. As a reminder, we hope that the information provided here isn't medical advice to you, and we highly, highly recommend that you seek medical attention if you are experiencing pain. But remember, we want to stay active if we are experiencing pain or an injury, and there's always ways that we can work around your injury so that you can stay in the gym and you can continue to train within your capacity. Right?
Definitely.
Awesome.
Thanks everyone.
Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.
Bye.